From our nation's capital, this is Naps Chat.
I'm gonna sit right down and write myself a letter and make believe it came from you.
Hi, and welcome to this week's episode of Naps Chat. I'm Bob Levy, the Director of Legislative and Political Affairs for the National Association of Postal Supervisors. This week's guest on Naps Chat will be Keith Abishar, the legislative representative for the American Federation of Government Employees. AFGE is America's largest federal employee union and is among the founding members of the Federal Postal Coalition. By the way, the National Association of Postal Supervisors is also among the founding members of the coalition. This episode of Naps Chat was recorded live before the 2025 Legislative Training Seminar, which was conducted on Monday, April 7th, 2025, and we in talk about the importance of coalitions, federal budget reconciliation, and postal issues. Dr. Keith Abishar is the legislative representative for the American Federation of Government Employees, which is the largest federal employee union in the United States, which represents approximately 820,000 federal employees. And they've had, I think you'd agree with me, Keith, a tough time recently. I've known Keith for about 28 years, believe it or not, ever since he began his career on Capitol Hill with Congressman Steny Hoyer of Maryland. He worked with Steny through Steny's years as the majority leader of the House of Representatives, as a senior policy advisor to him. Keith was someone, during the years on Capitol Hill, Keith was someone who the postal and federal employee community could always rely on to share information, commiserate with, to convey our positions to the House of Representatives leadership. But more importantly, he was able to share information from the leadership back to us. And Steny was a relentless advocate on behalf of postal and federal employees, as you well know. And Keith, to contribute to Keith, he was played an instrumental part of advising the majority leader and Congressman Hoyer on that. The reason I asked Keith to join us here today is within his capacity as a legislative representative of AFGE, American Federation of Government Employees, because of coalitions, about how we work together. I would just add that in the demonstration that we will be having, or the rally we'll be having on Tuesday afternoon, AFGE President Everett Kelly will be joining us in solidarity at the rally. Let me welcome Keith. So let me start by asking you this question, Keith. What in your background led you to come first to Capitol Hill and then go to the American Federation of Government Employees?
Well, it was really my major in college, political science, and I wound up staying in graduate school and all the way to a PhD in political science. And as I was doing my dissertation in political science, I asked myself, maybe I should learn how Capitol Hill actually works before I go back to the academic world and teach political science, because my specialty was supposed to be congressional politics. So I wound up going what I thought would be a short-term gig on Capitol Hill in 1997, and I wound up staying until 2023 because I fell in love with the work, and I worked for, as Bob said, with Congressman Steny Hoyer for almost all that time, and I saw no reason to return to academics. And so the PhD was worthless in the end.
What led you to AFGE?
Well, for those of you who follow federal employee politics and issues on Capitol Hill, you'll know that Congressman Steny Hoyer has more federal employees in his congressional district than virtually any member of the House or Senate, or certainly, well, the House. In fact, I think he's got the second largest number of federal employees in his district. He's got about almost 80,000 active federal employees in his district, and then of course their family members and countless numbers of federal retirees. So when he assigned me the federal employee portfolio back in 2003, he said, you know, Keith, do what you want. You know, I trust you on a lot of stuff. Use your instincts on this issue, but just remember, if you mess up this portfolio, I'm in trouble. So he said that jokingly. I think he had confidence in me, and to the day I left his office, but Over those years of following a group of constituents who were so important to my former boss, you learn their issues and you start working with the organization that represents them. And I developed a very strong relationship with AFG as well as other federal unions, NTEU, and also the postal unions and postal associations. Bruce Moyer, who spoke earlier, he was one of the first people I met after Bob introduced me to the sort of postal world when I took on the federal employee portfolio in the summer of 2003, and Bob was sure to make me meet with all the right postal people. So I've been following your issues for years. So that's what, so when I left Capitol Hill at the end of the last Democratic Congress at the end of 2022, December 2022, I spent 6 months out of office just relaxing and kind of taking the stock, and AFG came to me and said, we think you might be useful to us, and we worked out something, and that's why I'm here today.
Let's talk about coalitions.
Yep.
Talk to me about the commonality about the issues that AFG, your folks who you represented AFG have, and folks in this room working for the Postal Service.
Well, I mean, obviously the Postal, you may or may not know this, Bob certainly knows this, Bruce Moore would know this. Some of our issues are the same and some aren't. I mean, the Postal Service is organized differently. It's covered under a different title of the U.S. Code than the rest of the federal workforce. But I mean, there's still a lot of issues that unite the postal realm and the non-postal federal employee realm. We're all interested in retirement. We're all interested in healthcare. We're all interested in defending the integrity of public services that the federal government delivers, whether that's postal or non-postal services. So those are the issues that really tie us together. We obviously believe in the integrity of collective bargaining to the extent it exists in the federal workforce. We all know, federal employees can't strike, they can't negotiate wages, but they can negotiate workplace conditions, they can negotiate the grievance process, those sorts of things. So all these things unite us, not 100%, but they're issues that make the postal world and the non-postal federal world allies in a shared cause.
Talk to me now, if you can, about, since you've come over to AFG, you've participated in meetings of the Federal Postal Coalition, and working for Congressman Hoyer, you were on the other end of our lobbying activities as a coalition. Could you talk about the importance of the coalition of federal and postal employees working together to lobby and influence public policy?
Probably the best example is the postal reform law that was enacted in, finally enacted in 2022, April 2022.
Yeah.
There was a big White House ceremony. Bob was critical to the passage of that, I mean, in your organization. But I was working for the House Majority Leader at the time when we were doing that, Steny Hoyer, and we'd been working on postal reform for years. That wouldn't have gotten done solely if the postal forces alone had been pushing for it. Not to say they weren't the most important voice pushing for postal reform, but that was a coalition in action when you think about it, Bob. I mean, it was other federal unions getting involved because they wanted to make sure that some of the health care changes that were contemplated in the Postal Reform Act were crafted in such a fashion that it didn't undermine the integrity of the federal retirement system generally. So having the non-postal federal associations involved in the advocacy of postal reform was very helpful because they played an important role making sure that in addressing the health care issue, as we all know is an important issue to postal reform, in addressing that issue, it didn't cause, whatever that fix was going to be, didn't cause unintended consequences to the integrity of the federal retirement system generally. So working together, the two postal federal piece, we're able to make sure, okay, whatever we do and whatever we're advising Congress to do on this, we need to make sure they craft the retirement piece just so that it doesn't cause unintended consequences that hurt not just postal workers down the line when they retire, but also non-postal federal workers. That's an example of a coalition. Also other issues. I mean, the federal unions and associations, whether they were postal or non-postal, worked in conjunction with many of the business community associations who were very interested in a healthy, vigorous postal service. Why? Because they depend on the postal service. You heard Congressman Beyer describe how important mailed advertising was to his dealership here in Arlington. or actually in Falls Church, the business community had a very, very keen interest in postal reform. The pharmaceutical industry had a very keen interest in postal reform. Why? Because so many medications are delivered by the USPS. So that's an example of coalitions in action that you wouldn't necessarily think of as a coalition. When was the last time you actually thought of the Postal Service, the organization you're a member of, having much in common with the private industry? Not that you don't care about private industry, but you don't wake up every morning thinking, you know, what do I care? You know, why should I care about a Fortune 500 company? Well, Fortune 500 companies depend on what you deliver every day. They could not exist. I don't care which company you're talking about. Even Tesla has to mail stuff that your people deliver. So in a very constructive way, the coalition wasn't just who you would think would be working together, postal unions and associations, but non-postal federal unions and the business community working together. Even to some extent, advocacy groups that depend on, you know, First Amendment groups, social justice groups, they care about the Postal Service. They mail so much of their advocacy materials, nonprofit organizations. Again, they benefit from the best deal in town, especially if you're a nonprofit, is the Postal Service. So that's an example of the coalition. I don't think we could have, with no disrespect to the postal world, I'm not sure that was enough heft to get postal reform across the finish line. It took a larger and more diverse group of associations and businesses to really advocate to Republicans and Democrats alike on Capitol Hill, this needs to be done. If we're going to keep our economy healthy, if we're going to deliver what the Constitution says we need to deliver, and if the Postal Service is going to be successful for the next several decades.
It's funny, you know, waiting online with Ivan and Jimmy for the presidential bill signing on WEP, GPO, Windfall Elimination Provision, Government Pension Offset.
Well, that's another example, yeah.
I was standing online with a union president from the American Federation of Teachers, a state union, and she was saying, if not for the joining in of the police officers in states yeah. around the country and the firefighters around the country, even the coalition that we established on our own, it wouldn't have been possible to get the overwhelming majority of the House to sign onto a discharge petition to get the bill out of the Ways and Means Committee and onto the House floor. So the coalitions grow, don't shrink. That's the success in pushing.
And here's why the coalition matters, and that's a great example of Web GPO. Each of the component parts of a coalition, the broader it is, it's going to appeal to a different type of member of Congress. The reason why this Republican Congress, and I'm not trying to be political here, it's just a reality, it's a Republican majority that runs the place, it ran it last Congress. The reason that was able to, the Web GPO was able to get across the finish line is that, as Bob says, firefighters and law enforcement were strongly in favor of that reform. Had those two components not been part of the coalition, I doubt it would have gotten done. Why? Because the rest of the coalition weren't very sympathetic as far as Republican members of Congress are concerned. It's not that they don't care about education, but they're not real fans of the teachers' unions. So having the teachers' unions and teachers going to Capitol Hill saying, please do GPO web GPO reform, that wouldn't have really moved any House or Senate Republican to say, yeah, you know, that makes sense. Having law enforcement and firefighters, first responders telling them, well, here's why we need this reform, that moved them. So the broader your coalition, the more chance of success. Postal reform, it was the business community that really moved House and Senate Republicans to get behind postal reform. With all due respect to the postal unions and associations, you know, your average House or Senate Republican may not be really care what a postal union has to say about postal reform, but if the business community comes in, if a local car dealer comes in and says, I need a good postal service to get my business on a successful footing, they're going to listen. That's why a coalition, you don't want just like-minded people in the room as you're part of your coalition. You want to think outside the box and think, okay, I may not like this association for 364 days of the year, but on this day, we have something in common. We better work together to get the job done.
Let's come back a little bit to our parochial issues. And we're going to confront over the next month or so something that we've worked on for years. And we've been through this many times, Keith, the concept of a reconciliation bill. We've been in battles for like the last 20 some odd years
right.
on both sides, no matter who was in control. I mean, there were reconciliation bills when the Democrats were in control, and there are reconciliation bills when the Republicans are in control. But this year is rather unique, so I'd like to ask you the importance of the coalition of federal and postal employees this particular year on confronting the threat posed by reconciliation.
Well, it's existential in many ways. I mean, it's look, if the Republicans, and I'm not being partisan, it's just they control the House and Senate and the White House. So that's parties in control of all three offices tend to use reconciliation because they can, you know, it's a much easier way to pass big legislation if they can keep their people in order. But reconciliation, they're having a pretty tricky time right now trying to get on the same page with the Senate and the House. They have different plans. But we know that if they do get their reconciliation agenda enacted, and they need to get it done by the end of the year from their perspective, or else the 2017 tax cuts expire, that so they need to get it done, or else on January 1st, taxes spring back to what they were in 2017 or 2016. But the bottom line is they need to pay for these tax cuts, or the extension of these tax cuts, plus a bunch of new tax cuts they're hoping to enact at the end of the year by December 31st. They need to offset those with savings somewhere. And one of the places where we know they're going to try to seek savings is federal retirement benefits, both postal and non-postal federal benefits, FERS especially. We understand, they've told us, that they're going to seek at least $50 billion in savings from federal employee programs. Well, those programs are really going to be FERS, retirement, all retirement-related, and possibly insurance as well, FEHB. They're going to jack up the employee contribution to FERS, and they're going to probably jack up the premium that federal employees pay for their FEHB. Those are at a minimum what they'll seek to increase to find $50 billion in savings. The expectation is that everybody who is in FERS, whenever they were hired, will, if the reconciliation succeeds as Republicans want, will pay at least 4.4% for their FERS. Now, they could pay more. We don't know that they're going to stop at 4. Right now, new hires in the federal government pay 4.4. Those hired after, I think, 2013 pay 4.4%. Those hired before 2013 pay 0.8, and those in between, I think those hired between 2013 and 14 pay 3.2%. So at a minimum, we expect the Republican reconciliation bill to put everybody at 4.4% for FERS contribution whenever you were hired. It could go higher, but at a minimum, it'll be 4.4. FEHB, we don't know what the premium might look like, but we can expect that to go. They may also try to get rid of the way the FERS retirement is calculated, from the high 3 income, annual income, to high 5, which will have the effect of reducing the FERS annuity. They may also try to get rid of the FERS supplement. May not affect a lot of people in this room, but for those certain classes of federal employees who retire at 55, generally law enforcement, air traffic controllers, there's a supplement that carries them through to Social Security age. These are all in the chopping block, and almost certainly all of these will be cut. When I say cut, it'll be cuts, it'll be scored as cuts, but it'll be increased costs on you in this room. Again, the reason why advocacy at this point is very, very important. They're having a tough time on Capitol Hill getting their reconciliation blueprint passed, much less the hard work of actually specifying what's going to be cut. But they're going to do everything they can to succeed in getting their reconciliation done, because tax cuts will spring back to 2016 levels if they don't get it done by the end of the year. And they're going to go after the programs I just talked about. Everybody in this room has a vested interest. Your real income, take-home income will go down if the Republicans in their reconciliation scheme succeed in real terms, because you'll be paying way more for your FERS and FEHB in many cases in this room than you are now. So your net take-home pay will go down by as much as, over 5%.
One of the issues I touched upon, and Bruce Moyer did more of a deep dive on, is the decision by the administration to basically gut agencies, federal agencies, either eliminate them outright or basically reduce the workforce with such a magnitude that the agencies will be incapable of conducting their mission.
Right.
What implication do you think that has or could have for the Postal Service? And why does this make a difference for the entire federal postal community, if it does?
Well, the implication for the Postal Service, right now it's 550 FTEs? Or
it's around 630,000.
So how much?
600,000.
600,000.
Give or take.
So 600,000. I mean, I think, I mean, look, we've seen for the last, since January 20th, the assault on non-postal agencies in the federal government, getting rid of workers in a legally dubious manner, because Congress, you know, funds these agencies with the expectation they will have enough employees to actually spend the money in the way Congress intends. So with the Postal Service, I think it's long been the goal of certain members of Congress, again, mostly all Republicans, there's not a Democrat who supports privatization of the Postal Service, but it's been a goal of many key Republican members of the House and Senate to privatize the Postal Service, or at least diminish the role it plays in delivering services to the American people. So if they can, if this administration can tamper with the structure of the Postal Service and make employment at the Postal Service so unattractive that people quit, that it's easier to fire federal postal workers, they're essentially going to initiate a death spiral. If, you know, the fewer postal employees you have, the less efficient, the less successful deliveries will be, right? I mean, the more mistakes will be made. You need people to deliver the mail. You can't have a robot do it. You can't have AI do it. But if you set a course for failure for the Postal Service, you're planting the seeds of destruction such that the American people will say, well, my Postal Service has really declined in the last few years. Why is that? And then you create the conditions for the Republicans saying, okay, you know what, the Postal Service is failing, so let's just outsource this to the, you know, Pitney Bowes or whoever wants to take on this work, or Federal Express or UPS. Not that they're legally allowed to do that now, but we're in a situation now where the law doesn't really matter. And I think this is an administration that's willing to push the law and even go beyond it in order to achieve its purposes. It doesn't care if there's a possibility of breaking the law. It's pursuing an agenda that is frankly lawless in many cases. And I think the courts will eventually say many of these actions that it's undertaken are lawless. But I think we can expect something along those lines to happen to the Postal Service. We see this with the announcement, or at least the rumor, that they were going to put the Postal Service under the Commerce Department. As Congressman Beyer said earlier, we're not sure that's even constitutional. I certainly don't think it's constitutional. The Constitution clearly establishes a Postal Service. It's existed since Ben Franklin was the Postmaster General. I don't see how you can do that, but if you can do that, if you can move it to the Commerce Department, then you can have Secretary Lutnick saying, okay, you know what, we don't have a postal board. I'm just gonna unilaterally say, what, we're gonna just cut the postal service, we're gonna have a hiring freeze, we're gonna get rid of anybody who's been hired in the last year, probationary workers, I don't know if that works in the Postal Service, but he'll use whatever leverage he has in the existing law to get rid of as many postal workers as possible and then say, see, they can't do their job, so let's outsource this stuff. Mm-hmm. But I'm sorry about that long answer.
No, but it's appropriate, thank you.
When you create a problem, sometimes you do it on purpose so that you can then solve it the way you want to solve it. And that's kind of what's happening here.
Let me ask a final question. We work together in Washington, I mean, at the leadership. For example, President Ivan Butz participated in a rally with the labor union around 3 weeks ago. Your president came over, addressed the rally. We're having a rally tomorrow. Your president again. President Kelly is coming over to address. How can we create coalitions like that where we work together at a local level? We could do it at the federal level. We have a structure. We have the Federal Postal Coalition. But have you given much consideration how we could do this back home where we come from?
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously you're in every single congressional district in every state. You know, you're the supervisors. I don't know how closely you work on a day-to-day basis on the local level with the letter carriers and the processors. I mean, sometimes oftentimes your issues are the same, but not all the time. You know, you're the supervisors, so there's always going to be some inherent.
There's a difference between the work, as Chuck indicated up at the rally that was sponsored by the APW up in New York. There are disagreements we'll have on the workroom floor, but when it comes to the very existence of the Postal Service, there's no daylight between
us and the union. Yeah, and that's important, but it's actually activating on the local level. Those, you know, you're all working in the same place generally, so, I mean, it's working together outside the office, of course, or the post office, but it's working with your, you know, that immediate group of people. But it's also reaching out to local, look, look at all the local businesses in your communities that depend on your services. I mean, again, going to Congressman Beyer, you know, the local car dealership, you know, there's in every state, there's the Virginia Auto Dealers Association, just like there's the National Auto Dealers Association. There's the Chamber of Commerce in every city and state. All organizations that are interested in a healthy, successful postal service, they're not at all interested in reinventing the postal service. They've got enough to worry about besides who's going to deliver my advertising or my checks to the bank or whatever. It's reaching out to local businesses, or, you know, not knocking on each door and saying, you know, will you help us, but it's the local associations. I think that's a way to build those local coalitions that will catch the attention of the local member of Congress. It's not just going in as the postal group, but as a we did on postal reform and on the web GPO. It's like, hey, I never thought you guys worked together. That automatically triggers in a member's mind of Congress, wow, that's kind of interesting. I thought you were just a bunch of, you all you did was deliver the mail. I didn't realize you had these allies. I never even thought of you as allies of like the business community that I care about, or you know, the whatever it might be. So it's working with, you know, on the local level, it can be a little hard to, you know, not every city has a chamber of commerce. Not every city has a dealership organization association, but every state does. Every state has, so maybe the starting point is reaching out to your state associations in the business community and saying, hey, who on the local level is your representative here in the, and who could we reach out to, like pitch them on working together on holding fast against efforts to change the postal service. Those advocates in the business community aren't going to care about FERS or your retirement or anything like that, but they are going to care about the effect those changes will have on the ability of the federal the postal workforce to deliver. That's what they care about. Will the postal service still have enough people to deliver my mail? And when they find out it won't, that's when they're going to say, you know what, we better get involved here. Because the last thing I need right now in a world of business uncertainty is a postal service that can't do what I need to reach my customers. I don't know if that makes sense.
That makes absolute sense. We have our marching orders when we go back from Washington, go back home.
My take, and I worked for a boss who really, like, he worked with members on both sides of the aisle in a cordial, professional way. No one should be treated as an enemy, because you never know. Today's enemy could be tomorrow's ally. It's not to say you have to agree with them, but you know, over my dead body, I'll never work with that person. There's certain people you would never want to work with, and, you know, just for moral reasons or ethical reasons. But you know, someone who's ideologically different from you on most issues may just be someone who's willing to work with you on that one issue they care about and you care about. Always keep the door open, except when moral or ethical considerations are at stake from your own, you know, conscience. I mean, I would never advocate, you know, to do business with somebody you're ethically or morally opposed to, but most people in this country, you may not agree with them most of the time, but you can find a way to work with them without compromising your morals or ethics. But that's the red line my boss always said. The moment you have to cross that red line into compromising your morals or ethics, stop. But if that's not the case, keep the door open. You just never know.
Great. Thank you so much, Keith. Thank you. Keith Abishar with the American Federation of Government Employees.
And if I might say, really, for 28 years, Bob, I've seen Bob in action as a staffer on Capitol, for a senior member of Congress, and obviously at AFG. He is a very effective representative of your issues. And the reason I know that, I've been in more meetings with members and Bob, and they all call him Bob. When a member of Congress calls you by your first name, they know you and they like you and they listen to you. So, Bob, thanks for all
Keith.
You do.
Thank you, Keith.
And write myself a letter and make believe it came from you. I'm gonna